Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're now in lesson 17, and we're going through this mini-series here about adultery, about divorce, about marriage, to have a background on the law that Jesus Christ stated in Matthew 5 about marriage and about divorce, and the exceptions under which people can do one thing or the other. And so we are now in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, where the Apostle Paul is addressing also that. And in this chapter, he's addressing three categories here. He begins with a married person. And we read here in chapter 7, he is, in essence, addressing an issue that was given to him or sent to him for clarification. And so he's saying, now concerning the things of which I wrote, you wrote to me, that is, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Now, what does that mean? You see, if you don't have a background, if you don't have an understanding of the law of God, if you don't know the upbringing of the Apostle Paul and his knowledge of the Scriptures, you would not really comprehend what he's talking about here and what was really behind it, you see. Because all these things are written in the context of the knowledge of the law, not in the context of ignorance and illiteracy in the law of God. From the beginning of time, God, made the man and woman, you know, as the Apostle Paul mentioned, also himself, and he told them to become one. And the first command that he gave them is to be fruitful and multiply. So obviously God didn't create man and a woman, and then he tells them it's not good for a man to touch a woman. You see, he's speaking about certain circumstances that the people of God were going through at the time. A lot of persecution at this time in Rome, in Corinth, in Judea, in many places. Things were getting very tough. And for some people, it was preferable not to add more burdens. And marriage is a burden. Having children is a burden, you see. So I have taken all these things into account in order to understand what he's talking about here. So what he says, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. This is the context and the background behind it. Nevertheless, it says, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife. In other words, in spite of the fact that things are very tough, you know, if you cannot contain yourself, and if you don't have a wife, you're going to get into mischief, you see, because you live in an area at the time, in a culture, where there were a lot of temples and temple prostitutes, and it's so easy just to drift, you know, into that area, and go in that direction and satisfy somebody's needs. So I said, in order to avoid that, he said, you better get married, in spite of the fact that things are difficult nowadays. So he said, in order to avoid immorality, let each man have his own wife and let each woman have her own husband. Because in those temples, you had it both ways. If a man wanted sex, he went there. If a woman wanted sex, he went there, because they had male and female temple prostitutes, and sanctified, they called them in the old days, and then in the prophets, that's what they were called. And from the days of Deuteronomy, God told them, do not allow those sanctified ones. In other words, they were sanctified for that purpose. That was a part of the worship that they had toward their gods. They thought that through sex, you're worshiping the gods. And so I said, to avoid this kind of a problem, be it a man or a woman, you know, if you have needs, sexual needs, a companionship, romance, things like that, get married. And then he gives them instructions about how to behave once they are within the marriage. And we're not going to concentrate on this this point, but we'll come back to it later. So first, we're talking about those who are married. See, this is the issue here. You need some relief from your needs, you know, which are natural. God gave us those passions and desires. He said, get married. So first he's addressing the married people, you see. And if they are not married, he said, and you have this issue, get married. So in either case, he's addressing the married people. And then as you go through the other scriptures after that, you see that he's talking about husband and wife and what they need to do during marriage. And as I said, we'll come back to it later when we talk about another aspect of this law. And then he says in verse 7, you know, in spite of that, that it's better not to be married. He said, for I wish that all men were even as I myself. In other words, you know, I can discipline myself, you know, I control my passions and desires, so I can give myself totally to the ministry. And mind you, the whole context is the rough times that they were going through. You see, these were not normal times. These were not days of peace. These were days of war, and a lot of bad things were happening around that time. You see, so always remember the context. And so he says, for I wish that all men were even as I myself, but each one has his own gift from God, one in this manner and another in that. In other words, don't condemn one another, because you know some of us may be able to discipline ourselves and to stay out of trouble, so to speak, and others cannot. So in either case, do not condemn one another. If somebody gets married, that's fine. If somebody doesn't want to get married, you know, he can handle it, so he can totally devote himself to God, that's fine too. And then he speaks to another category, but I say to the unmarried and to the widows, you see, so I have another category there of unmarried and widows. You know, if you're a widow, obviously you're unmarried. The mate had died. And so this is the second category, people who are not married, and he's talking about them. Either they may be singles if they're unmarried, and widows used to be married. It is good for them if they remain even as I am. Again, for the same reason, things are very tough, very difficult. Why add more difficulties? You see, and that's the background behind it. You know, it's because of the difficult time that they were going through. And that's in essence what he's talking about here. As you continue to read the chapter, you'll see that very plainly. In verse 26, for example, it says, I suppose therefore that this is good. In other words, staying away from marriage. This is good because, that's the only reason, because of the present distress. You see, that it is good for a man to remain as he is, and for a woman likewise, you see. And when you don't read that, you don't understand the background, you think that he's preaching celibacy, and he did not. That's contrary to the law of God. He himself later on called it a doctrine of demons. You see, speaking of those who, he said, forbid to marry and to abstain from all meat. You see, and that's in essence what the Church of Rome later on had done. You know, they totally misunderstood the words of the Apostle Paul, and they came up with their own doctrines, and he called it, he warned against it already. He said, these are doctrines of demons, because God commanded man. He created man and woman to become one. He commanded them, you see, to reproduce themselves, to be fruitful and multiplied. And he gave them the institution of marriage, and then the joys and the pleasures of human sexuality, you see, and romance and all these things, to make them one in every way. So obviously, he's not talking about this issue. He's talking about the reality that we are going through a very terrible time, you know, present distress. And for that reason, he said, let's slow down. You know, let's not add more burdens on ourselves. So the whole context here of this chapter and of these teachings are, you know, these elements of times of trouble, of distress, of difficulties, and has nothing to do with celibacy, and has nothing to do with the hatred of sex or marriage or things like that. You see, people who don't understand that, obviously, they totally misunderstand the Apostle Paul, and a lot of people created their own doctrines based on ignorance and blindness, just like Peter would say. A lot of people, you know, study the words of the Apostle Paul, which are, you know, some of them, he said, a little bit hard to be understood by the unlearned, not by the learned, but by the unlearned, and so they wrestle with them, he said, to their own destruction. You see? And later on, we'll come to Peter, and then we'll expound on that more. And so now he's speaking to the second category, the unmarried and the widows. He said, it is good for them if they remain even as I am. You see, you know, he was not married. We don't know whether he was married, and then his wife died. You know, we have no information of that. But we know that he certainly was not with a wife, you see. And he disciplined himself, and he totally gave himself to the ministry. And it's not because he preferred celibacy. It's not before, you know, because he didn't want to get married. He didn't want to have sex or things like that. It's because he was going through a very, very difficult time, you see. To begin with, you know, his ministry was not easy, having to travel all the time. And it's not good to have a wife when you are in that category unless she's with you all the time. And, you know, he was going through a lot of troubles with his own countrymen and others who wanted to kill him, and they put him in prison, and they beat him, you know, several times. You know, that's not good reality for marriage, you see. And so that's in essence what he's saying here. And many others were also being persecuted in many places. So that's what he's saying here. You know, it's good for them if they stay just as I am, but if they cannot exercise themselves or control themselves, you know, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion. You see? In other words, even under the circumstances in which we are you know, find ourselves, this present distress, it's still much better to marry than to burn with passion. You see? So there's no prohibition there against marriage. He couldn't do that. That's contrary to the law of God. And would have never done that. And so he tells them, you know, if you are unmarried or if you're a widow, and, you know, you still have powerful needs, strong needs, things like that, you know, don't withhold yourself from that, even though things are difficult. In other words, you're going to have to count the cost and do it anyway. But it's so much better, he said. It's better to marry than to have the problem that you have to deal with all the time. And then he speaks to the married people in verse 10. Again, you know, he's addressing the married people. So I have, you know, different categories here. You know, those who are singles, he said, well, if they want to get married, and let them get married. And then once you are married, this is the way you're going to behave. And then he speaks to another category of unmarried and widows. Unmarried will include the single people, you see, and the widows, because they are not anymore married. You know, they also become singles, but not singles because they've been that way, but they lost their mate. And so, you see, comes back to the married. He said, to the married, I command, yet not I, but the Lord. So the teachings that he gives them are not the teachings of Paul, that are the teachings of Jesus Christ, the God of Israel, who in Sinai gave the law, you see. And it's all based on the law. He's not deviating from the law of God. He's not deviating from the Torah that Christ said, don't think that I came to do away with it until heaven and earth shall pass, not one jot or one tittle shall pass from it. So he's functioning totally within the law, never above it or against it, you see. And it's always by the direction of Jesus Christ, the King, the Redeemer of Israel, and the God of Israel who descended on Mount Sinai. You see, if you do not consider this entirety of background, you're going to invent your own doctrines. That's exactly what people have done. So they've got all those churches out there and do their own thing. They think that they're the followers of Christ. And they're children of ignorance and confusion. And so it says, now to the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord, a wife is not to depart from her husband. You see, in other words, don't mess around with this institution of marriage. You know, well, you know, I don't like him, or he doesn't fulfill my needs, or whatever it may be. You know, well, I'm bolting out. You know, I'm taking off. A lot of people do it. That's why there are more people who are getting divorced than are getting married. An awful lot of people who are getting married are getting divorced, you see, because they are not willing. They are not willing to have that mind of Jesus Christ. As I said, let that mind be in you, which was in Jesus Christ, the God of Israel. Look what he was willing to put up with. You know, the wife that he had and all the problems that they had from the honeymoon when she was already committing adultery right there, you see, having the golden calf. And so people, unfortunately, are taking the institution of marriage, an institution of friendship, an institution of the family so easily, you know. A few little problems and they take off. They're not willing to work with the situation. I can't take it anymore, they say. And there's an awful lot of selfishness there, an awful lot of pride, an awful lot of unwillingness to admit, you know, error, you know, and the shortcomings of every single one of us. None of us is perfect. You see, we are a trial to each other. No matter how much we love one another, we're still a trial for each other, you see, because of what we are. And it takes a long time to harmonize our hopes and dreams and desires and passions and needs and all the kind of, you know, the totality, the complexity of the human mind and heart. And so it's not easy. It wasn't meant to be easy, and it's not easy for God to have a relationship with us, with all the problems that we constantly give him. And yet he never gives up on us, you see? And that's within the concept of this marriage that Christ talked about, the God of Israel talked about, the apostles are talking about, you see? That's the entirety of the subject there, marriage and adultery and divorce and how much God hates it. And he wants us to learn to put up with an awful lot of things. But then he also, because of our limitations, he gave us leeways, you see, and made exceptions to these laws. And we're going to read about certain exceptions, but certainly they're for people who, for whatever reason, you see, just can't take it anymore. And if they're going to stay in a certain situation, they'll go out of their mind, and things will be much, much worse than that. So God is also not only a God of justice and a God of law, but he's also a God of mercy and of grace. You see, without it, we can't make it. So it's built in into the law of God. Some people think the law is only a legal code. They don't realize, no. The law is the entirety, you see, of the mind and nature and character of God. And it includes a legal code, and it includes the law of mercy and the law of kindness and the law of grace and the law of compassion and the law of marriage and the law of the temple and the law of the sacrifices. You see, there are so many things that are inclusive within it. And when people don't understand it, you know, they get this confused concept. Well, there is law there and grace here, law there and mercy here, law there and faith here. You see? Instead of understanding what Christ said about it. There are matters of the law that are not as heavy, and there are the weightier matters of the law, and they include love and grace and mercy and faith, you see, and compassion, and all kind of things like that, and forgiveness, you see. So you have to understand the entirety of it. And some people just can't take it. God says, okay, well, there comes a time where we can't take it, and I'm not going to put on you more than you can handle. You see, and some people don't realize that, and they have become very rigid, and they forget about grace and about mercy. And that was one major problem of the Pharisees. They were so self-disciplined. You see, the apostle was a Pharisee of the Pharisee. He came from this mold. He could take it, you see. He could do certain things that others cannot. They didn't, you know, were not raised in under this mold, you see. So you have to factor all these elements into this subject and to understand it properly and to understand the mind of God. At what point God says, well, you know, you can't take it anymore. I'm not going to force it on you. But on the other hand, don't take it lightly. Don't say, well, you know, I don't like it anymore. I'm getting out. Well, if that's the kind of a nature you have, you'll constantly do it for eternity, even with God himself. At what point are we going to learn? You see, to bear down, to grind our teeth, you see, to bite our lip, and to be willing to begin with, to compromise, to accommodate, to give in of our own self. You see, to forgive, not to hold grudges. So all these things are elements that we need to learn. And those things are not learned through easy times. They're learned oftentimes through the hard times that we go through. You see? And so he says if they cannot, you know, if they have, in terms of sex, you know, if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry. And for women, and for men, likewise, he says to the married, I command, yet not I, by the Lord. You see, but the Lord is the one that is commanding, it's not man. A wife is not to depart from her husband. You see, in other words, she is not to depart from her husband under just any given circumstance. That's the context. Context is not, you know, if he's the kind of a person that is going to shoot her and destroy her, or, you know, do all kind of horrible things to her, that she's not to depart. This is not what God is talking about, you see. Unless you understand the entirety of the law, you don't understand what you're reading. And because people do not have understanding, they invent their own doctrines. And that's how you end up with people who are on the right, people who are on the left, people who are liberal, people who are conservative, people who are in between, people who are, you know, the far right or the far left, you see. Because they all lean to their own understanding and interpreting whatever in life. And the law of God made it very plain, as Moses said it, and that's the mind of God. Don't go to the right, don't go to the left. Don't lean to your own understanding. You see, there is a left, and there is a right, and there is God's way. Even though those on the left and on the right thinking that their way is right. You see, and we have to understand that. And so when he says a wife is not to depart from her husband, it doesn't mean period. And for men likewise. It means don't take it so lightly, you see. Be willing to work with it. Work hard. Be willing to take even a lot. Learn from your Creator. Look what he has to go through. Look what parents have to go through with their own little children. You don't throw the baby out, you know. If he cries night after night after night, he says, well, I can't take it anymore. I'm going to throw it out. You see, I'm walking out. I'm not going to feed the kid anymore. I'm not going to change his diapers. We don't act like that. That's what he's saying here. Don't take it too lightly. Be willing to go through a lot in order, you know, under the law of God and the teachings of God to reach a point where you're able to accommodate one another, you're able to care about one another, you develop sensitivity, you develop awareness and consideration, and it's not easy. You're not born with it, you see. Obviously, people who have been raised on the law of God from a very young age, they have already have a great advantage. That's what God was saying about, you know, Jesus, that is, Paul was saying about the Jews. What advantage does the Jew have, you know, Romans 3, much in every way, because the oracles were committed to him. That means he knows the mind of God, at least to a large degree, and he can function by it. And of course, even then, they were not doing it perfectly or right, as they should. But still, they had a great advantage over those, you know, who just didn't have any knowledge nor understanding. And when you deal with people who have absolutely no proper education, you know how difficult things are going to be for them and for others, you see. And that's the context here also. You know, the wife is not to depart from her husband because she, on the other hand, she has to learn to put up with an awful lot and pray to God and ask him to soften the heart of the husband, or, you know, the other way around, or, you know, work on herself, do your best, you see, and work with the situation, learn many lessons from it. Don't be so quick. That's what he's saying here. Don't be so quick just to walk out. Because what kind of a nature and character are you going to develop for the rest of eternity? If that's the way you're going to behave. What if God treated us like that? We would never exist. You see, from the first moment that we were born, he would destroy us. Just walk out, you know, never care for us. So understand the context here. That's what we're talking about here. You know, that's where we're spending time about this, you know, concept of marriage and divorce and adultery. What goes into it? It's because, as Christ put it, because of the hardness in your heart, you see. Had it not been for that hardness in our heart, there wouldn't be no divorce. People would work things out. No divorce in the family, no divorce among friends, no divorce among, you know, employees and employers. But you get divorce everywhere. It's a way of life, you know. Certain things go wrong, don't go your way, I'm taking off. That's what we say. You know, take your job and shove it, you know, as the song says. Because of the hardness of our hearts. So, in other words, that's what he's talking about here. Don't be so quick just to walk away. Because that's contrary to the law of God, and God hates divorce. God hates people, you see, and hates that spirit and attitude of just, I'm going to walk, you know, away from it. You know, I couldn't care less about it. I'm not going to compromise. I'm not going to give in. I'm not going to take anything, you see. Because that's not his nature. If we're to be like him, we're going to have to learn to be willing to take an awful lot, as he took an awful lot and still does. And every moment since the day he created us, he's taking an awful lot from us. And he's not destroying us. So, you know, I understand that, because this law of marriage between a man and a woman, you see, it's the same thing between God and the ones that he created. And we have to learn to function likewise. So with this in mind, you know, think about these words. A wife is not to depart from her husband. A husband is not to depart from his wife. You see, a slave should not walk away from his master, you know, in the old days when they had slaves. You know, just because of he told him, well, do this and do that. He said, well, I'm not going to do it, you see. And workers are not just to walk away out of the job just because, you know, a tiny little thing, you know, a few little things, a few little grievances are there, you see. And friends are not to walk away from each other. And family members should not just split because they had a little argument about this or that, you see. And neighborhood should not split, and country should not split, you see. But the whole world is in confusion. And we hate one another, and we walk away on each other, and we hurt one another. All these things are elements of marriage. And all these things are responsible for divorce, you see. And all these things are the reason why people commit adultery. So we have to understand it, you know, the magnified form of it, the entire concept of what it is, you know, the greater a picture of what it is all about. You know, then we begin to understand what we are reading here, what we are studying, what the Word of God is all about, what this life is all about, and where God wants us to be. And so with this in mind, understand it. But still, God being God of grace and of God of mercy, you know, there comes a time when he says, okay, I say, realize you just can't take it. You've done everything that you can. And then he gives us exceptions, and we'll go through that at the end. And so he says, but even if she does depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. And a husband is not to divorce his wife. It goes both ways, because people were playing games with this institution. And they were creating problems, not only for themselves, but for the children, for the family, for friends, you see? Because you affect everybody when you go through divorce. You know, friends don't know what to do with you. because you are separate, you hate one another, and they cannot invite you as they used to before, and they don't know if they're going to befriend one, well, the other person is going to get angry, you see. It creates a lot of problems everywhere. And so, generally speaking, these are generalists, you know, this is the ideal, in essence. Don't do that. But still, God allows certain exceptions here. And so understand the context, and then understand also later on the grace of God, the mercy of God, you know, the exceptions that God still allows here and there. Generally speaking, that's the way it should be. A wife and our husband should not divorce one another. They should work it out. You know, they have a tough time for a while, well, let them stay separate and then think about it and reconcile, come back. You see, that's the intent of it, to bring them back. That's why it says, let them be reconciled. And then he talks to another category in verse 12, but to the rest, he talked about singles, you see, and he talks about married people, and he talks about widowed, and talks about people that left each other and tells them get back together and reconcile. And then he's talking about the rest. Who are the rest? You see? People that have had, you know, these problems. But to the rest, I, not the Lord, say. If any brother has a wife, so he's talking about here, you see, up to now he's talking in essence about singles, widows, married people within the faith. You see, they're all, you know, in the church, so to speak. And I was talking about people who have mixed marriages. One is converted, the other one is not. So they're in a different category because now you have different exceptions. You see, because, you know, the unconverted, what does he care about this kind of teaching? What does she care about this kind of teaching? So now you've got other circumstances and you have to deal with it differently. And that's all also a major problem. And that's the reason why he said, marry within, you know, the body of Christ. Don't marry outside, because you're going to be unequally yoked, and you're going to have a lot of problems, and God has to deal with those kind of problems, and therefore there are laws to deal also with these circumstances. So this is what he's talking about here. That's a totally different category, you see, in the sense of the mixed marriage. But to the rest, I, not the Lord, say, if any brother has a wife who does not believe, you see, that's a mixed marriage, and she's unwilling, and we're not talking about racial, you know, mixed marriage, we're talking about, you know, in the faith and out of the faith, and she's willing to live with him, let him not divorce her. So he should not use that as an excuse. Well, you know, she's unconverted and I cannot live with her. He says, don't use that as an excuse. You see? But if you have a lot of persecution, if you have a lot of troubles and things like that, well, they have a different story. So again, he said, strive, don't, you know, not to get divorced, not to cut the ties. You see, learn, because after all, the wife of God is not a converted woman, you see, and for centuries she was committing adultery with idols, you know, and having all kind of evil, you know, inclinations. Well, God is a converted person, you might say. He's a good converted husband. His wife is an unconverted wife. He didn't use that as an excuse to throw her out, you see. So that's in essence what he's talking about. Learn to be like God. Learn to have his mind. Be like him. You see? And even though, you know, she's not where she should be, and you are limited by that, don't throw her out. If she is willing to live with you, don't divorce her. And a woman who has a husband who does not believe, again, now it's the other way around, if he is willing to live with her, let her not divorce him. Now he says, remember, this is God saying that. Because that's what God told Israel. You see? And that's what Jesus Christ said in Matthew 5, where we started this subject. You see? And because he himself was willing to take an awful lot. So he's not going to require from us something we cannot handle. You see? But he just doesn't want us to lean to our own human nature and function based on that, but to lean to his nature and function by his law so we can become like him. And therefore, in becoming like him, we should be willing to take an awful lot. And that's why he says, I'll give you the kingdom, but with persecution. Or as Paul says, through much tribulation we must enter into the kingdom. And these are part of the persecutions we go through in life and tribulations and the difficulties in life. You see, we don't go around them, we go through them. And with the help of God, we conquer and overcome. And those who become, you know, or have been unwilling partners, you know, giving us a hard time, may turn around and become willing partners, and then we've gained them, not lost them. You see, just like God is dealing with us, though we are unwilling partners oftentimes, and yet he works with us until we come to the point where we become willing partners, and then he has us for him, you know, to be with him for eternity. You see? So when we consider marriage, when we consider relationship, friendship, when we consider all these partnerships or whatever, you know, names people give them in business and commerce and, you know, anything, you know, any endeavor of two or many together, you see, we have to consider the whole, the entire picture, and to comprehend and understand that and then be willing to put up with an awful lot and work with each other and work on ourselves. But generally speaking, we have to understand that God hates divorce. You see, and some of us think that's the easy way, that's the way out. That's the first thing that we want to do. You see, just bolt out. I'm going to do my own thing. You're not going to tell me what to do. And so he says, don't do that. You don't divorce her, and she doesn't divorce you. Why? He's explaining verse 14, for the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Otherwise, your children would be unclean. You see, what he's talking about here is the reality that when a man is a servant of God, when a woman is a servant of God, she's sanctified by God, and her household is also sanctified by God because of her faith. You see? And that's what he's talking about here. He said, you're both sanctified by each other. Otherwise, he said, your children would be unclean. That means if you separate, but now they are holy. You see? And we're going to discuss a few more things about this concept of the sanctification and the holy seed, you know, the holy, the sanctified, set apart. And God puts them in a certain category. Even though his children, you know, his people that he calls and deals with them may have unconverted mates, you see, he extends his grace and mercy to them and blessings. And that's what he had done from the beginning, for example, with the household of Abraham. Though he dealt with Abraham and called him out of Ur of the Chaldean, and after that, after of Haran, he also sanctified the entirety of his household. So when he told him to circumcise, well, Abraham circumcised everybody, you see, in his household, all the men, you see. So the whole household became partaker of, you know, all the members of that household became partakers of the blessings and covenants that God gave to Abraham. And so when they came out of Egypt, also all the strangers came with them who were not Israelites. But because, you know, they cleaved to Israel, they were sanctified by Israel, since Israel was sanctified by God. You see? And when a husband or a wife marries somebody who is not converted, God sanctifies them and their children. You see? And if they have slaves, like in the old days, God would sanctify the slaves too, and set his angels over them, and protect them, and defend them, and bless them. And that's the way it goes. That's what he's talking about here. And when you live in a nation where people are obedient to God, well, even the foreigners and the strangers that are among you are going to be blessed by God too. You see, because when he pours blessings on you, he's not going to withhold it from them, and they become sanctified by you. You see, that's the concept he's talking about here. Sanctified, you know, and you know, it's something that has been there before that, and we're going to go through that to give us more background on this matter. So he's saying to them, you know, the children are going to be sanctified, your household is going to be sanctified, and therefore don't depart, because if you do depart, you know, if you split, they're not going to be under God's protection anymore, you see. They're going to be on their own. You don't want that to happen. But if the unbeliever departs, let him or let her depart. A brother or a sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace. You see, well, what is that bondage that he's talking about? Well, the law of God has dominion over you. You see, the law of marriage. That's what he's talking about here. This whole chapter is about the law of marriage. Romans 7 also, he talks about the law of marriage. We'll come to that later on. You see, God has dominion over you as long as you're alive. That's what he says here. You know, as long as the husband is alive, you know, she should not depart from him, and he should not depart from her. They should reconcile. But if there is a mixed marriage, you know, maybe God called you in these circumstances, or maybe, you know, you just it happened later on, whichever is the case, you see. Somebody you loved and you wanted to be with, and, you know, then God called you, and then you marry him or marry her anyway, you see. And what do you do under the circumstances? So that's what he's saying here. if this unconverted person departs, what can you do? You're not bound. And, that's a part of the grace of God. And if you have a situation where a person is converted, and the other person, the person may be converted but has a very difficult time, whatever it may be, and they also depart, you see? And then the yoke of marriage is no longer on you because of that, but it's not because you bolted out, or you took it easy, or you didn't want to work with the situation, you see? It's beyond your control. And that's what God says, well, I understand that too. That's what grace and mercy are there for, you see? And God is not going to ask us to do that which we cannot do, nor impose on us that, which we cannot accomplish, anything that we cannot accomplish. And so that's what he's saying here. If they depart, you are no longer under the law of marriage, you see? Just like as if they died, you see? When they depart from it, and you try everything you can to help. It's not that you help them do that, you made their way easy. No, you tried everything that you can, and they left anyway, you see? Then the marriage comes to an end by their own action, which created, in essence, not only separation and a divorce, but death of the marriage. So they killed it by their behavior, and now you're no longer under that bondage. So you see here, even though the overall concept is you get married, you stay married for life. But then there are circumstances, because we're human beings, and exceptions, you see? And so we have to understand all kind of things like that. Just like with the law of God, he says, if a woman departs from her husband, they have a divorce, he gives her a bill of divorce, she goes away, she cannot come back to him, you see? But then again, you see with God, there is an exception. What's the exception? Well, he dies, she dies, they're no longer under bondage, you see, to that law of marriage, and therefore now they can remarry. And here it is, you see? Somebody departs, it's just like death in that case, but you have to do everything that you can to preserve the marriage. And then there are circumstances beyond which you cannot go, and then you have to deal with that too. And then he says in verse 16, "For how do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband?" You see? In other words, be willing to take an awful lot because you don't know how it's going to end up. Maybe God is using it to test you, to create things there in your marriage, and to produce good things in the future. And that's applicable to both of them, obviously. And that's what he says, or how do you know, husband, whether you will save your wife? And so both of them have to be mindful of that fact. Just like God, you see, in being willing to put up with an awful lot of Israel, the intent was to bring her around. And that's what all the writings of the prophets are all about. That's what Moses said from the beginning. Even though you are what you are, God is going to allow you, to go through all these tough times, and persecution is going to bring calamities on you because of your behavior, but he's not going to leave you nor forsake you. He's going to bring you around because he wants to heal you, and he was willing to give his life for it, and he did it. You see, because he wants to save his wife. So he wants us to learn to develop this nature in us, be willing to put up with an awful lot in order to bring them around, because you see, one major reason why we divorce, because we think only about ourselves, our needs, our desires, our passions, you see, what we don't get. We think about self, self, self. And that's the reason why we get to the point where we can't take it anymore, because all we think about is self. And what we are deprived of, we don't think about the other person, you see. And if we begin to shift the attention, you see, from ourselves to the other person, things are going to be different. And we're going to begin to look at things from their point of view, and maybe we're going to discover maybe we are the problem. You see? Or maybe by changing ourselves, the other person would say, well, I guess it's not bad to be with this person. You see? It becomes more attractive. We don't think that way. And so God tells us to behave the way he did with us, to do everything that we can to save a relationship, any kind of a relationship, be it marriage, friendship, at work, and things like that. And when we are not willing to do it, when we are selfish, when we think only about ourselves, I'm hurt, my feelings are hurt, you don't like me, or things like that, all we think is only about ourselves, well, obviously, we blow the problem out of proportion, and we get to the point that we can't take it anymore, you see, sort of, shooting our own feet all the time, ourselves. And so we destroy our relationships with our own hands. And instead of being builders, we become destroyers. You see? Well, obviously, then that's when people either go into adultery or, you know, all kind of things like that. Or just, you know, withhold their attention from each other and passion and, you know, love and affection and things like that. And, you know, they go to hobbies and do other things and they end up in divorce. First, you know, in their mind and heart, and then literally the physical divorce that we go through. You see? But that's not the nature of God. And that's why through this process of this relationship that God gave us, not only within the marriage, but within the family, within friends and community and nations and things like that, God is trying to teach us to become like Him so that we can live in harmony forever and ever. You see? Not in division and confusion and strife. Yeah, that's what the whole world is all about. They're all experiencing this divorce. You see? And they go to war. And people do it all the time. You know, well, most people that end up in divorce, they go to war in the court. And they have lawyers. And their intent is to get every penny out of the other person. Totally selfish. You see? Now, what do we gain by that? We're destroying our own selves and those around us. That's why God says, I hate divorce. I hate what it does. Now, He was not responsible for it. Well, his own divorce, even though He had to send Israel away. Israel was, because he was perfect. But in our case, you know, we're not perfect. None of us is perfect. We are the problem. It's not the other person. Even though there is always one that contributes more, you know, than the other. You see? And so, you know, under these circumstances, we have to understand what we are reading, what the subject is all about. And again, with the family, with the children, with the household, you see, God says, stay together, you know, if you're in a mixed marriage, mixed relationship, so that the holy seed would be preserved, you know, that's the children. And God addressed this issue about the holy seed in different places. And in the book of Malachi in chapter 2, with the whole book here, which is a small one, only 3-4 chapters, God is in essence discussing His relationship with His wife. The problems, you know, the marital problems they have. And of course, He was perfect, she was not. And so He's bringing certain things against them. And verse 13, he's talking about the second issue that he had against them. He said, and this is the second thing that you do, you see, in our relationship, in this marriage. You cover the altar of the Lord with tears, with weeping and crying, so that He does not regard the offering anymore. What is he talking about? He said, in your relationship, in your own marriages, in your own friendships, you are hurting one another, you are oppressing one another, and one of you ends up coming to the temple all the time bringing an offering, you see, and crying and weeping before me. Or maybe you recognize, you know, the evil that you have done, and then you repent, you come back and you do it. You see, but generally speaking, but the ones who are being oppressed, he said, you cover my altar with weeping and crying, so that he does not regard the offering anymore. So, you know, when somebody else in your family, in your marriage, you know, maybe your son, maybe your daughter, maybe your brother, you know, you're oppressing, and they come before God and they cry before God for help and deliverance, and then you come and offer an offering to God. God, he said, I don't accept you. You see, the way you behave, why should I accept you? Look what you're doing to others. They're crying all the time. And that's what he's talking about here. He says he does not regard the offering anymore, nor receives it with goodwill from your hands. And yet you say, for what reason? He's having sort of an argument back and forth with his wife, just like he did when he came in the flesh, you know, constantly debating, you know, different issues with the Pharisees and the Sadducees and these people and those people, you see. So he says, you know, for what reason? You see? Well, God answers, because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth. You see? You came together, you became one flesh, God was a witness, He bound you, you are married. Now you're supposed to behave yourself. Well, instead of that, you're tormenting one another. And so he says, God has been a witness between you and your wife, the wife of your youth, with whom you have dealt treacherously, just like they did with him. Yet she is your companion. That's the way you should treat her, not your enemy. And your wife by covenant. But did he not make them one? You know, according to the law from the beginning of time, he said, I made you to be one, not fight with one another, having... he says, speaking about himself, did he not make them one, having a remnant of the Spirit? And why one? In other words, you see, you have to understand the background behind it so you would know what he's talking about here. He made them to become one, one flesh, and to merge, you see, and become one Spirit. having the same hopes, the same goals, the same dreams, the same future, the same destiny. You see, not only with each other, but in God. And he said he seeks godly offspring from you. When you get married, he wants you to be, you know, live in peace together and build a home, build a nest of love, of affection. And so you will have more like you, not just you. And so he says he seeks godly offspring. You see, children that will come out of marriage where there is harmony and love and unity, so they too repeat the process instead of adversity and hatred and malice and unclean offspring, you see. In other words, just like before, as we read between the mixed marriages. And if one is not converted, stick together so the children will remain sanctified and be clean, not unclean. And not behave like children, you know, who are little devils and create a lot of problems. Anyway, we're going to stop at this point, continue next time. This is again Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until the next lesson.